Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. One of the images that's always struck me of the Buddha's, when he's illustrating the practice, is the image of the carpenter who's using his adze or his whatever tool one is using. What he's saying the carpenter didn't notice the on a day-to-day basis how much the handle of his tool was worn away and the grip on his handle was a very clear mark was being made. But that over time, and then it was clear that there was this, the imprint of his hand was being wearing away the wood of the handle of his tool. And so that in the same way, a practitioner doesn't really recognize today I got rid of so much greed, so much hatred, so much delusion. Yesterday I got rid of so much, the day before I got rid of so much. But it's just over time one recognizes that, yeah, there has been a lessening of greed, there has been a lessening of hatred, there has been a lessening of delusion. So that, because sometimes we're looking for signs, we're looking for clear indications to bolster our confidence or bolster our sense of certainty that somehow we're we're getting somewhere, we're getting ahead, we're making a mark on the practice. But in the same way that the carpenter really doesn't need to be looking and seeing how much of the handle is being worn away each day, but just knowing that by working every day, using the tool to cut wood, to shape wood, to do the building, that tool is going to wear away. That mark is going to be, the handprint or the handle is going to be worn down. So in the same way for us in practice, knowing that we are doing the practice, and that we are committed to the practice, that we are consistent in the practice, that we are diligent in the practice, that the results will come. We don't have to torture ourselves by trying to measure it too much, but pay attention more to that we are upholding the practice, or that we are doing the practice, and so that I think that's an important theme, and certainly Ajahn Chah would be an emphasis on in his teaching that what was important was that consistent practice, that's really what undermines the defilements, which opens the road, opens the path up to bear fruit. So to not be measuring, not to be comparing, not to be scheming as to which particular technique is getting how much results, which particular meditation session is really getting oneself ahead, but really paying attention to doing the practice. When you're inspired, energetic, then you do the practice. Now when you're listless and fed up, you still do the practice. This is our commitment is to the training, and commitment is to the being, bringing mindfulness and wisdom into all the things that we're doing, bringing that mindfulness and investigation, discernment into the different facets of our life, and in particular, in the meditation. As we practice, then really paying attention to where are we directing our attention? Because the it's easy to idealize, say, what we should be achieving, attaining, getting in practice. We should be mindful. We should be peaceful. We should be pure. We should be compassionate. I mean, all of these are things that are things we should be. And they're all good things to put attention on. But, if we're measuring ourselves by that, then we'll always end up coming short. Because those are the results of practice. And if paying attention to the practice itself, and in particular, paying attention to, say, that as we chanted this evening, the Dhammacakka Sutta, paying attention to the Four Noble Truths, paying attention to the experience of suffering, and whether that's experienced as kind of physical pain, emotional pain, mental pain, or whether it's just some kind of distress, tension, tightness, dis-ease, discontent, dissatisfaction, however extreme or little it is, it's still dukkha. To be able to recognize that that's there without glossing it over, without justifying it, without fretting and worrying, hating it, resenting it, glorifying it, but just saying, this is dukkha. This is what dukkha feels like. This is what dukkha is. This is a first noble truth to be known. Because that's the when the Buddha points to to these four noble truths, he also points to what we need to do with them, and it's that refrain of, you know, this is the noble truth of suffering. This noble truth of suffering is to be known. This noble truth of suffering has been known. And then the noble truth of the cause of suffering. This is the noble truth of the cause of suffering. The noble truth of the cause of suffering is to be abandoned. And then this noble truth of the cause of suffering has been abandoned. So that, and then this is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. The noble truth of the cessation of suffering is to be realized. And this noble truth of cessation of suffering has been realized. This is the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. This noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering is to be developed or cultivated. And this noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering has been cultivated. So these, when we're chanting it, it seems like we're just sort of going over the same old things over and over. But it's an extremely important aspect of these, of the teaching of the Buddhas, that he's giving us a framework of investigation for our experience, and then different tools or different things to do, because the particular tendency that most of us have, you know, certainly wanting to, we want to abandon, get rid of, annihilate, destroy suffering. And we don't take the time, we don't pay attention to actually know it. We're not willing, we don't have the patience to do that, we don't have the willingness to do it. It's something that we shrink back from or run away from. So to actually have the composure and clarity to know, this is suffering. Not as a, oh woe is me, I am suffering, but this is suffering. It's a noble truth when it's, this is suffering. Rather than, you know, it's actually a cause for, the continuation and perpetuation of suffering when we have that, oh woe is me, or this is, you know, this really sucks, this is suffering. Why me? That just keeps the whole process going. But in order to really know suffering, then of course we have to rely on the path. And again, it's not measuring how much suffering we got rid of today or how much suffering we got, but it's like really relying on the path of a practice, the path of training, path of development. This Eightfold Path. of virtue, of sila, samadhi, panya. It's different permutations. So to cultivate that, develop that, to be bringing up those different aspects that give us the opportunity to be established in the way of training. And as we are increasingly attentive to putting our effort and energy into the different factors of the path, you know, the aspects of virtue which are, you know, characterized by restraint, by composure, by kind of a conscientiousness, having conscience, and a you know, like a healthy sense of shrinking away from the unskillful. Those are aspects of virtue. The qualities of samadhi are, there's a settledness, a steadiness of mind, a composure of mind, tenacity of mind, a willingness to stick to something. Like the mind never is really, you know, like samadhi. You know, one really has to be willing to be kind of tenacious, not in a foolish or blind way, but there has to be a willingness to be tenacious in sticking with the object of attention. And, you know, one has to be skillful in doing that. And one has to be able to let fall away the things that are distractions, and then hone into the center of what you're attending to. Otherwise, one's drawn into distractions, and the mind is never able to really settle, to open up into clarity. And the aspects of discernment are the qualities of you know, wise consideration, a real considered attention to things, this reflecting, investigating, contemplating, trying to peel away the impulsive tendencies of the mind that just react to our standard likes and dislikes, and just sort of looking more clearly at things, really discerning its nature, its characteristics, rather than they say that blind following of impulse of the attraction and aversion, or sinking into confusion or dullness, but really looking into things, not just accepting the immediate appearance of things, but looking underneath it. And that's whether that's external phenomena that we're either attracted or repelled by, or even the nature of consciousness, nature of the mind, nature of the what we call the knowing. We really have to keep peeling that back and seeing what's underneath there. You know, let's say wisdom and discernment that is working is really questioning, not in a doubting way, but questioning in an attentive way. You know, what's underneath there? Where's the resolution? So that when that opens one into a knowing of dukkha, that allows one to say to go through dukkha, to see through dukkha, and recognize, oh, that it actually ceases. And one can see it in glimpses and glimmers from time to time, and then one also gets a more confidence and a resilience in the mind that recognizes that we keep falling for suffering. That is, keep falling for. That which is unsatisfactory is not worth it. We can let that drop, one can let that go. It can cease. There's a tremendous and a joy comes up from that. Tremendous peace. In recognizing that can all cease, that can all be left to be dropped away. But in order to do that, we have to recognize, well, what is it that keeps fooling us? What keeps us? We keep getting sucker punched by our own desires and attachments. So recognizing that the Buddha points to the just three different kinds of desires: and sensual desire, a desire of seeking gratification, pleasurable sensation, distraction, excitement, desire for being or becoming, that propping up of the sense of self, of me being something, getting somewhere, becoming something, some position, some recognition, gaining something, or the pushing away of experience. I don't like this, it shouldn't be this way, I shouldn't be this way, the world shouldn't be this way, how can I either get away from that or annihilate it and destroy it? And those fundamental desires. And you know, watching that, and that's what the Buddha points to, that's what we need to abandon, that's what we need to let go of, that's what we need to it's quite a strong word, pahana. It can sometimes mean to be destroyed. It's a strong, and so that needs to be let go of, that needs to be abandoned. So when we see that, and it's not, you know, it's important that we're not approaching that from a place of, you know, in the same way it's important to not sort of create that identification with suffering, and sort of the me and my suffering. So in the same way, really, sort of the abandoning of of desire is not sort of, you know, me and all my endless desires, but it's really sort of seeing that's a noble truth of the cause of suffering. And the more that I can align myself with these as truths, the more I'm able to relinquish those causes and realize cessation of suffering. And it's not about me getting anywhere, being anything particular, but it's really seeing from a perspective of noble truths. These are dynamics. If we build a personality, a person into that, we'll keep suffering. But when we're really able to approach it from, say, a practice, this devotion to practice, putting practice ahead of everything, training ahead of everything, not in a personal way, not in a measuring way, the same way that one doesn't have to be measuring the carpenter doesn't need to be measuring how much that tool is being worn away, but just that by using the tool, using that hammer over and over and over again, the impression is made on it, the mark is made on it. So in the same way, and for our own in our own aspiration, really turning attention to these Four Noble Truths and having the practice focused on these Four Noble Truths as the anchor of the practice, rather than the sort of the me trying to achieve, attain, annihilate, destroy, me trying to become somebody pure, me trying to get rid of the impure, me, we wear ourselves down with that, me trying to measure how much I've got accomplished, how much I've got to go, how much I've gotten rid of. All of that is a distraction that just keeps complicating things. But bringing the practice back to these four points. You know, what is suffering? What is unsatisfactory? What is stressful? What is uncomfortable? What is its cause as a noble truth? What is its cessation as a noble truth? What is the path as a noble truth? And as we make that shift of attention, when you start really, everything kind of is a part of the practice, and the practice has a very clear, there's a very clear result. And it's only when when we're able to make that shift from a place of me, to putting the sort of, say, the Dhamma or these truths in the center, that really becomes clear. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
sarva karandama se
sarva